Welcome to This Is Money. I'm Georgie Frost, and alongside me today is editor Simon Lambert. And coming up, another blow for Santander customers. We look at whether a mortgage holiday is a good idea, even if you don't need one. And Britain's best-selling motor in April was, wait for it, a van. Don't forget you can stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app at first. Yep, the blows keep coming for Santander 123 customers. They faced a double whammy of bad news this week. On the very same day that one cut to their interest rate came in, they were told to expect another in August, meaning in the space of just 3 months, customers holding the full balance will have gone from earning up to £302 a year to just £120 in interest. So you'd expect, of course, naturally, Santander would cut the £5 a month charge for the privilege of holding this account by an equal percentage. No, of course they didn't. That stays exactly the same. But it's not just Santander customers. This has been a miserable month for savings, with current accounts paying them decent interest rate return, with cuts from Nationwide and TSB as well. So Simon, I remember Santander back in the day, talking about it on Podcast Past, the darling of current accounts at one stage. But since it's been the darling, it has not been the darling so much more, because the cuts keep coming. Is it time they just scrap the whole thing? Because when the last cuts were announced, we decided if this would signal the end of these sorts of accounts altogether. Just explain briefly what they do.
Yes, we asked in our previous podcast when we talked about this whether this was the end of current accounts with benefits. And it turned out not to be, but this might be. So the Santander 123 account, very, very popular. When it was launched, it was at the sort of peak of the current account switching battle. There was a huge amount of pressure on the banks to get people to switch current accounts because there's a lot of customer inertia. This was seen as a real problem, and that people should switch to a bank account that was better for them rather than just sticking with the one they opened when they were 18. And you saw a flurry of these offers. Santander had the 123, Nationwide had its Flex Direct, which would pay you 5% interest. You were being offered £100 to switch here, £125 to switch there. Halifax had its Reward current account that paid you £5 a month. And these were great, and it did get people switching. The majority of people still just stuck with the bank account that they had, that they opened when they were 18, of course. But it did get more people switching. I think the savvier people just did a lot more switching. But yeah. Santander's had this cashback element, a 1% cashback element, a 2% cashback element on different stuff, and then three. Three was the interest, 3% interest. Balances up to £20,000. Hugely attractive to people because it beat their savings rate, and it meant you could just leave money sat in your current account. You didn't need to worry about opening a savings account. That lasted until 2016. It was then cut to 1.5%, and it was then cut to 1% earlier this week. And then on the day that the 1% cut came in, Santander announced that it was cutting again to 0.6%. So we now have the Santander 1-2-0.6 account, which doesn't have the same catchy ring, does it?
No, not at all. What have they said? Obviously, we've had the impact of the coronavirus, we've had the Bank of England interest rate cuts. I'm sure a lot of the blame is going on here, but these cuts were coming in anyway. These sorts of cuts have been coming.
It's the age-old blame the base rate cut, isn't it? You know, base rate's now 0.1% and unprecedented 0.1%. Everything's unprecedented these days.
Yeah,
but that genuinely is. And Santander said we can't keep the rate that high. And there's been a wave of savings rate cuts in the wake of the Bank of England base rate cut. I mean, I suppose they could theoretically leave it higher. It's not like their mortgage standard variable rate isn't considerably higher. It's not like the rate you get charged on a credit card isn't considerably higher. Their personal loan rates, those are very low, but they are higher than this. And actually, it's only the people who get accepted who get those very, very low rates. They can offer people personal loans at considerably higher rates. But the problem is they're being squeezed on this thing called their net interest margin, the difference between what they pay to savers and what they get in from borrowers. And they've said they have no choice but to do this. Now, the problem is that if you look at it on the surface, you think, well, what's the point of this? But then you dig deeper and you go, well, hang on a minute. I've had a load of letters from my banks and building societies telling me my savings rate's been cut, and it's been cut to below this. I mean, I've got some on accounts telling me it's been cut to 0.01%.
Yeah.
At which point I should say that if anybody is listening to this, who works for a bank, who controls their savings, who even controls the bank, I mean, I will keep going up and up and up, see where we hit the level. Don't pay me 0.01% on my savings. Just pay me nothing. Okay, 0.01% is an insult. Don't send me a letter saying that. Just send me a letter saying, I'm sorry, Mr. Lambert, we're not actually going to pay you any interest on your savings anymore, but we're going to provide you with a safe place to keep your money. You'll get the FSCS protection up to £85,000, and we're going to not pay you interest rather than insult you with 0.01%. I'd prefer that.
It's but
yeah,
true.
So my point.
But I guess the point of this is at least you're earning something. Is that what you're saying? And actually, there's not a lot else places to go.
That is what I'm saying, is you're going to be losing out to inflation because inflation is higher. So your money is going to be eroded in real terms. But inflation is probably going to drop. It is already dropping and it's forecast to keep dropping. There's some people who suggest it's then going to go up quite a lot after that. But I mean, it's better to get something rather than nothing. And in all honesty, if your other savings accounts are paying you less than this, then you're better off having it in the Santander account and earning your 0.6%. But you're probably better off going and finding a much better savings account. You know, if you go to thisismoney.co.uk/save, you'll find our independent Best Buy savings tables. And there you'll find the best deals on the market. And the best deals on the market are paying you about 1.2%. Not great, but it's double 0.6%.
I guess in the same vein, we've said there's nowhere else to go. These are tough times. You're going to expect more cuts. We're having more cuts, things like TSB, Nationwide as well. Is it time these sorts of... Is there any point in it? I know you said this might signal the end of them, but really, is there a point to them?
I think...
Should we just go back to basics?
Yeah. I think a lot of the life's been sucked out of some of these accounts. It's still worth having a current account with a bank that suits you, for example. I mean, the overdraft thing's been knocked on the head by the new overdraft rules that mean everyone just charges you 40%. So you can't go for a sort of, you know, interest-free overdraft element or something. But customer service, for example, I bank with First Direct. I'm very, very happy with First Direct as a bank. And I've banked with them for some years now. And I got paid £100 to join them. I mean, which is great because, you know, if you can get paid £100 to join a bank that has great customer service, that's wonderful. I also recently opened a bank account with Starling, who offer fee-free purchases overseas. And that's a real winner as far as I'm concerned. And actually, it turns out it's a really good account. They got my card to me. They say they'll get it to you within 3 days. They got it to me in the next day, one of them.
Yeah.
And the app's really good. You make a payment, the payment comes through instantaneously. You can see it in your account. I've been very happy with it. There are reasons to switch, but I think reasons to switch for benefits are being eroded substantially. And I can't help but get the feeling, I don't know about you, Georgie, but the steam's come out of this whole current account switching thing a bit, hasn't it? It's a bit yesterday's news. Nobody can really be bothered anymore. It doesn't seem like the banks are really trying much. Not in the same way that they once were. And it seems like the financial watchdog and everyone, the authority just gone, ugh, we tried to make everyone switch. They still, most of them didn't. We give up.
Do we need to, though? I mean, my thinking is, I've been with HSBC for, well, it's the longest relationship I've ever had, that's for sure. And I, you know what? I don't really know what to compare it with. So that's one thing. But I just imagine it's all much of a muchness. It does what I want it to. Probably not perfectly, but then I just think, well, what else does? So is there a benefit to it?
I think I would argue go for something that works well and has really good customer service is what I would say over, you know, getting paid what is now a minimal amount of interest. The cashback's capped at £15 a month anyway on the Santander account, so you can't get that much. But I would say go for the customer service and go for something that works well. And actually, your bog standard current account from a bank that you might have had since you were 18, perhaps your HSBC one, you might be happy with it. I mean, when you call them up, who do you get through to? Do they help you? Do they satisfy what you need from a bank account? Or do you think this could be a bit better?
Yeah. All right. Well, in that case, if Santander 123 still does amazing customer service and is a good product, then stick with it, I suppose. Right, well, let's move on to this because I want to talk about mortgage holidays. So a bit of a change of gear here. One area where banks have agreed to help customers, yes, because the government told them to, really, although this is voluntary, is on their mortgage repayments. Now, back in mid-March, lenders agreed with the Chancellor to offer mortgage holidays. Since that time, 1.6 million people have taken advantage of it. That's one in seven mortgages at the moment. Now, while the move was aimed specifically at helping those who've been affected by coronavirus measures, a number of people have been asking if they should get one, even if they don't need to. When this first came out, there was a lot of noise about the fact that you have to show that you've been impacted. Well, you don't have to. You just have to say to them that you think you might be concerned about your repayments in the future. But one reader has written in asking just about this specific topic, with relation to can they earn more if they were to invest that money. So this is what they wrote. Both me and my partner are still working full time and we are able to meet our mortgage payments, but we are discussing whether we should ask for a mortgage holiday anyway and save the money instead. How do the holidays work? Do you get to skip 3 months interest for the, I know the answer to this, for the payments you miss, or does it just get added on at the end? Also, our mortgage rate is only 1.9%. If we took the money and put it in savings or invested it, could we benefit over the long term? So firstly, back to basics. This is not a new concept, is it, Simon? Mortgage holidays. These have been around before coronavirus.
Yes. Well, banks and building societies have offered these for some time for people who are in temporary financial difficulty. That's why the idea came about and came about so quickly. And I believe that actually it's now 2 million mortgage holidays was something I read. I mean, it's astonishing, really.
Wow.
But then there's 6.3 million people who've been furloughed. So you can understand why this is happening. And the banks were hit by an absolute wave of people phoning up and asking for these. And like you said, there's a bit of a misconception that there's this whole, you know, are you struggling? Can you prove you're struggling and everything? That's not what's happening. There might be more was happening originally, but basically it's just like, can I have a mortgage holiday? Yes. I think I don't think it goes much deeper than that. Actually, that's not quite true. I'm joking there because I did speak to HSBC's head of home buying the other day, and she was telling me they didn't offer these mortgage holidays before that. So they have had to get them up and running in double quick time, which is quite impressive because usually it would take, you know, maybe 3 months, 6 months, whatever, to get even just a new feature offered on the product that they do. But they managed to get this up and running in a couple of weeks, and they've had loads of people phone up. And Michelle Andrews, sorry, I should have mentioned her name before, who was HSBC's head of home buying, it explained to me that they are actually, you know, it's not just a quick, hi, yes, there you go. They are asking them on the phone, and they're trying to find out from them as well whether there might be a better option. What would be the better option for these people? There is a degree of help.
It's not free, is it? You know, this is not just a 3 months way.
No, it's not free because and all the different banks and building societies have a slightly different way of doing this. They can let you extend the term. They can get you to just pay it back a little bit more every month. Mm. They can
short-term repayment or
exactly. So there's different ways of doing it, but you do have to pay it back. It's not a free holiday
with interest.
Just like any normal holiday, you have to move your mortgage holiday. And it will cost you more money in the long run because you're paying your mortgage back over a slightly longer period of time. So there's some extra interest, which then feeds into this question. And I have been asked this question on more than one occasion by a number of different people. And very similar to this reader question here of, I don't actually need a mortgage holiday, but is it worth taking one anyway? And quite often then followed up with the, you know, we could save the money, invest the money.
Why are they telling you that they want to take one? Just for a break? Just or because they're thinking, actually, can I make money or?
Yeah, largely, because if they don't need the money, the question largely revolves around, could I make a bit of money here?
Right.
And the answer is you could, but you would find it very, very difficult. So let's take the example where you put the money into a savings account. So the person who asked this question of us got a mortgage rate of 1.9%. Now, if you took that money and you took that mortgage holiday, you wouldn't pay your mortgage payments for 3 months. So you've got your 3 months mortgage payments. You put them into your savings account. And then can you beat the interest, the extra interest you're being charged on your mortgage over time? No, not at the moment, not with the savings account. In the scenario where mortgage rates and savings rates stay exactly the same, you're going to really, really struggle to beat it because savings rates are so low, as we were talking about earlier. And actually, there's a good calculator here I should mention, which Will used to do this response. Mortgage broker Habito has a mortgage holiday calculator tool. So if you want to go there, you can see how much it would bump up your costs. Now, if you invested it, you could beat it. And in fact, probably, for example, if you're looking at over 20 years, you're highly likely to get a return that is better than 1.9%. And so you could probably get maybe 5% over those 20 years. That would be a reasonable thing to work on. Although I should caution here that if you look back over the last 20 years from the point we're at now, you haven't got 5% if you've been investing in the UK stock market. But the profit that you make on top of the extra money that you've got to pay back, etc., is going to be relatively low. And so it's probably...
Like, what are you talking about? Fiver or 100 quid or...?
No, you're probably going to make maybe... well, we did some maths here. Will did some maths here. And you could probably make a few hundred quid.
Yeah. So it's worth the risk, kind of taking the effort, etc.
So a profit of £472 in the example that he's done here. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, figures vary and stuff like that. But is it worth you doing that? Because you also open the door to another scenario where you don't do what you intended to do or were meant to do, and you just spend the money.
No, Simon, who would do that?
Well, it's the gap between the rational behaviour and the irrational behaviour, and it's where behavioural economics comes in, isn't it? And nudge theory and all these other kinds of things. The stuff that when you were taught economics in the old days, everybody behaved rationally and made rational decisions. And the rise of behavioral economics has come about because it's observed that actually, funnily enough, people don't behave rationally. Yeah. And they just don't do what they're meant to do quite often, even though it'd be the sensible course of action. So you don't pay your mortgage for 3 months. Then maybe you put the money in the investment account. Maybe you actually do that. And then at some point you go, oh, actually, I'll go on holiday. I could use that money for a holiday. And you use your mortgage holiday money for an actual holiday, or you don't actually manage to get it into the investment account, or you just kind of spend it, or you go, maybe I'll just put some of it in the investment account and maybe I'll get a new sofa or a new TV. And then you just end up paying more for that in the long run. So you can make money on a mortgage holiday, but you probably won't make much. And you might fall into the trap of not doing what you meant to.
I can see... There might be a couple of scenarios where this people would be seriously thinking about this. One, I think if you've got very expensive debt that you would like to clear and pay off, it depends how much the repayments will be. We're hearing most of them will be under 50 quid, you know, some about, you know, 5 to 20 quid extra a month that you'd have to pay. And you've got to obviously think about the future and how that will affect your financial plan. Some we're hearing are a heck of a lot more than that per month, 200 plus. You know, that is a significant amount. But if it's just a small amount and you want to pay off anything like expensive debt, or if you don't have a decent savings pot, and I know this goes sort of contrary to what you were saying about the fact that there is very low interest rates, it is more the fact that this issue is probably not going to be confined, shall we say, to the next, you know, this up until the end of the mortgage holiday scheme, like June. This could go on for a lot longer, the economic troubles. And if you don't have that sort of security of mind, something that may help you further down the line, say, when there is no scheme to have your back, I can sort of understand that to a degree, although you should be obviously saving anyway. But apart from that, yeah, I'm with you. I can't see. And also there is that, as a lot of people have pointed out, the moral issue of the people who genuinely need these. Phone lines are being clogged up. People who work in banks and building societies are doing work in processing these for those who don't need it and slowing down those people that desperately do.
You make a number of very good points there, Georgie, including the moral issue, which brilliantly I had completely forgotten. Yes,
but I know you were thinking it. That's why I said it.
Just to point out, actually, that the first bit of the answer to this is that banks and building societies are rushed off their feet actually dealing with people who do have financial issues. So if you don't have financial issues, don't take up their time when they could be dealing with someone who actually genuinely does need help. And that is what the mortgage industry has repeatedly pointed out. And what yours truly should have pointed out, rather than going straight into the can you make some money off the back of it.
Because it was so obvious, Simon. It was so obvious. Was, and I knew you could play that.
Yeah, it's not that I have no morals or no scruples. It's just that it was so obvious that you shouldn't be doing it.
Exactly.
Secondly, actually, that there's another good point there, is that cash in hand is worth something, or cash in bank is worth something. And say you don't have any savings and you're seriously concerned that your job's going to go, and you think, actually, if my mortgage payments are £1,000 a month, and if I had £3,000 in savings, that would make a big difference to me, just in case I do lose my job. And I reckon I could tide myself over for some time with £3,000 in savings versus nothing in savings. It might be worth doing. I mean, the issue is your mortgage payments are going to start up again after the holiday.
Yeah.
I'd question, though.
But then if you are made redundant, you could be offered this. There's no government scheme that we know of to extend this beyond June. If, like you were in the past, made redundant, for example, you could then be offered another mortgage holiday. Now, of course, this all racks up, and you have to be confident with your earning ability. But it's just a, if nothing else, a mental buffer for you, I think, for some people. I mean, it doesn't probably make the best economic and personal finance sense to do that. But in terms of what is a difficult time and people feeling better, like you said, cash in a hand is worth mortgage in a bush. That doesn't make sense, but you know what I mean.
I think we'd probably best steer away from any phrases here. I think that actually, and if you've got expensive debt, if you've got £3,000 on your credit card and it's costing you 18% a month, you might be better off paying a little bit of extra money on. In fact, you would theoretically be better off paying a little bit extra money on your mortgage and clearing that credit card debt. I would question whether this mortgage holiday thing is actually going to come to an end in, what, the end of June, isn't it?
Well, the decisions need to be made. So what do you think is going to happen? Because also it comes to an end at the same time the furlough scheme is going to come to an end. So are we going to see the Chancellor said no cliff edge drop off or whatever he said, but we're looking at that, we're facing that, aren't we?
That's the problem we face. And all this stuff was rushed out as an emergency measure, furlough scheme, mortgage holidays and so on. And a lot of it, we've talked about this before, like a lot of it leaves me feeling distinctly financially queasy. The fact that the state is paying 80% of the wages up to £30,000 a year of 6.3 million people is insane. But I can see the logic behind it, and what they're trying to do is they're trying to stop this because they've paused the economy effectively. I mean, look at the numbers we had this week, the PMI reading for construction. Anything above 50 is expansion. Anything below 50 is contraction. It was 8. It was like 8? Really? I mean, in a way, I was surprised it got as high as 8, considering the amount that was stopped. I think that's just all the builders who are just still doing work on people's houses, whatever. Yeah. The numbers coming out are absolutely astonishing. The Bank of England, when it held interest rates the other day and, you know, gave its forecast for the economy and the worst recession since the mini ice age, you know, 300 years ago. It's absolutely astonishing what's going on. So you can see why they went, we have to do anything we possibly can to stop all these people being made redundant, and also to prevent people just defaulting en masse on their mortgages, because that would cause an even bigger problem and it would make the recession even worse.
Yeah.
Or the other thing is basically people would just continue to go to work, because that was the other problem. It's like they needed people to stop going to work. So if it's not get paid or lose their jobs, if they're going to work, they're going to go to work. And same with the mortgage thing. Well, I've got to go to work, so I've got to pay my mortgage. But it does make me think that there's no way they're going to be able to stop these mortgage holidays in a month's time now? A month and a bit? I mean, just with the furlough scheme. So now they're trying to work out how they unpick the furlough scheme. Do they go to 60% of wages? So you start, you know, chipping it away. Do they go to just some sectors that are harder hit? You know, for example, pubs aren't going to be open in a month, in 6 weeks' time, are they, unfortunately?
Yeah.
So, or restaurants, you know, half capacity, airlines.
I mean, there's
stories in the paper today, the end of foreign travel. You know, people can be quarantined for 2 weeks when they come back into the country. Those people aren't going to be going back to work anytime soon, are they? A shout out to the lady in the co-op I met last week, who was an EasyJet pilot, who has basically, she wasn't even furloughed. She was made redundant. And now she's working on the checkout in the co-op. She's only recently qualified, in fact. There's a lot of people affected by this. And if they didn't want to have a cliff edge scenario at the start of lockdown, they're not going to want to have a cliff edge scenario in 6 weeks' time.
Well, precisely. So, and like two massive schemes coming to an end at the
same
time.
And then you get to the point where, you know, something we've discussed before, how do you pay for all this stuff? I mean, 6 months ago, in the run-up to the election, we were worrying about how we could afford the NHS. Now we're worrying about how we can afford two NHSs, because the furlough scheme, by some estimates, isn't going to cost as much as the NHS. And so we've had, the government was going to raise, £45 billion in April from gilt sales, which is huge. It's the IFS commented that's the most it's raised, you know, on record. It's more than it raised in any single month, even during the financial crisis. And then we discovered after that that it had used its Ways and Means facility with the Bank of England in order to just borrow money, which is like it's like its emergency overdraft. And effectively, it was borrowing an unlimited amount. So how does this all get paid back? Taxes have to rise, but taxes would have to rise by so much that it would be massively deflationary. The government doesn't want deflation. It wants inflation because it wants financial repression. It wants inflation to run above the interest rate on its debt so that it erodes the value of its debt. So it's not going to want to bring in huge tax rises. Also, because those tax rises can't just hit the rich. They have to hit everyone because it's got to raise so much money. Austerity, doesn't appear to be much appetite for that anymore. Boris was never a big fan of that, and he made it clear the other day that he didn't fancy that. And in theoretically, in a recession, you're meant to spend more money. You could argue last time round, the state was very bloated after the Blair Brown years and everything, so we needed austerity. Can't argue that coming out the back of a decade of austerity. Maybe we just write it off, you know.
And I just don't know what the answer to this is.
The answer is. And you're going to hear much. I wrote my column about this week. You're going to hear many more talks. It's an outlier at the moment. You're going to start hearing more talk about some kind of global debt jubilee, because all of the big major Western nations have this problem. And you know, some kind of orchestrated one-off print the money. Central banks print the money,
buy
the government debt themselves, and then it just gets written off. Because otherwise we're going to be paying for it for decades, coming off the back of paying for something else.
Is it doable?
For an entire decade. I don't know. You think it was absolutely insane.
All the things that we didn't think were doable have just been done recently.
But
so
we went through the financial looking glass some time ago.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, if it's going to happen, maybe this time will be the time that it happens. But it is, you know, insane. So someone taking a mortgage holiday to try and make 500 quid off investing over 20 years pales into insignificance compared
doesn't
to that,
it just,
doesn't it?
Doesn't it just? And I'm going to slightly lighten the mood, Simon, by veering us off this topic because, it's, oh my goodness me, can send us round in spirals and not happy ones either. But the corona effect hitting the motoring industry. Now, we've seen quite a lot of what's going on there, but we got some stats out this week that have made people wonder whether this is another sort of effect of coronavirus hitting the motoring industry. And that is the UK's most registered vehicle in April was not a car, as one might have expected. It was a van. But does that necessarily mean we're all going out, we're starting our own business, we're going out delivering, and it's actually the effect? Or was this something that's been in the pipeline for longer than this, and it's just something to talk about?
Well, as a friend of mine once said, when he announced his intention to get a van, he said, once you've got a van, you can start earning. Which brilliantly, almost exactly the same line about 3 years later cropped up in an episode of Peep Show. So it just goes to show that it's a true statement, because one of my friends said it and it was on Peep Show. But no, it's what this is to do with is another one of those astonishing statistics. is car sales in April collapsed by 97%, 97.3%, in fact. That's quite a big drop. The basis that there were only 4,321 cars registered in the month, the lowest figure on record since 1946, and bear in mind there's a lot more cars generally registered each month than there were in 1946, it meant that the Mercedes Sprinter could become the most popular vehicle in the month because van sales managed to outstrip it. And this isn't people going out buying a van to start earning. This is more the fact that people had already ordered these and they continued to be delivered through the month. And if ever there was a month when people who had ordered vans and had vans on order needed the vans, it was last month. And actually, this highlights, if you look at this list, it's quite interesting. It highlights the growth in traffic of vans and delivery vans in particular. Mercedes-Benz Sprinter, Peugeot Boxer, Vauxhall Vivaro, Ford Transit Custom, Isuzu D-Max, Ford Transit, Nissan NV200, that's an electric van, Mercedes-Benz Vito, Iveco Daily, and the Citroen Berlingo. A lot of these used either by tradesmen or quite often nowadays people whizzing around delivering packages and parcels. The best-selling car, though, and this is very interesting, Tesla Model 3. Oh. Electric car. First time ever the best-selling car was an electric car. And all it needed to do that was for car sales to drop 97%.
So it wouldn't have done it without it. How far do you think, though, a lot of people going online anyway, a lot of people using contactless and stuff. And I know you're thinking that perhaps the knock-on long-term effects of coronavirus won't perhaps be as long-term as changeable as perhaps we think that they might be. But I'm wondering if things that were happening anyway, like contactless, etc., this just is speeding it up. And therefore, do you think people might start looking at, you know, green cars being the most best-selling and think, oh, okay. Perhaps people more considerate of the environment now because of all this, or do you just think, nah?
I do, in a way, think that. I mean, I think if you shut all the dealerships, then there's a problem in terms of selling cars and buying cars. And the cars that are being delivered are cars that have been ordered before last month. Tesla has a backlog of orders on its Model 3. It's working its way through them, but people waited a long time for them to arrive. They waited even longer for them to come to the UK. And there was a few months last year where it managed to rocket up the sales charts, largely due to the fact that a big batch of them were delivered to people. Mm-hmm. The I-Pace, for example, Jaguar I-Pace is in number two. That's a £64,000 car. It's not that £64,000 electric cars have suddenly become hugely more popular than the Vauxhall Corsa in number three. It's the fact that there's a backlog of orders on the I-Pace as well. And as we said before, 97% down. I do think, though, that maybe we might see out the back of this more electric cars coming into that sort of top 10 or top 20 cars, if only because the car manufacturers have really upped their game over the last year, and you're getting more affordable electric cars coming out and they're proving to be very popular with people. When I say more affordable, I mean more affordable than how expensive electric cars normally are, not more affordable than petrol or diesel, because you're still paying about a £5,000-£6,000 premium, often sometimes more, for the same car. But people are coming around to them, and I think maybe people will be more interested. And after any major event, you do get a slight change in behaviour. And the car makers as well, bear in mind, because they've stopped their factories, you know, they've paused production and everything, they're going to restart production. But it gives them that pause, gives them an opportunity to maybe focus even more on electric cars than they already were doing, and to push them even harder. Tesla, we did ask them how they're delivering these cars. And it's explained to us, it's switched to contactless handovers at the customer's homes or at its delivery centres when we went into lockdown. Whereas, in contrast, lots of other UK car dealerships and just suspended operations. All the supporting paperwork for the purchase of the vehicle is pre-organised via the customer's Tesla account. No need to sign a contract with the salesman. Go down there and try and get sold some Scotch Guard on the seats, etc. On the day the car's delivered, the vehicle is left in a safe location with access arranged via the Tesla smartphone app. So you walk up with Tesla smartphone app. You press the button. It opens the car. All your stuff's inside, including your key. And you drive off in your new Tesla.
Boom.
For an essential journey only.
Obviously.
No going out for a spin now.
Obviously.
No going out to enjoy it for fun. You can only make essential journeys. Okay. We were talking about the police, weren't we, the other day?
We were.
I do in a way feel a bit sorry for them over this weekend, because whilst the government has postponed its announcement on whether it's going to ease lockdown measures at all, I think it's going to be a lot of people very disappointed as well, because people were expecting much more easing than we're going to get. Postponed it from Thursday to Sunday because there was some important data coming out over the weekend that it needed to consider.
Yeah, i.e. someone didn't factor in the fact that when they were going to announce this, it was a bloody bank holiday. I mean, honestly, what I've seen doing my exercising in the park, I think people got the memo.
Yeah, I think we've now reached the limits of basically the British public deciding how much of this they're willing to put up with, and they've decided to just ease it themselves. But I was reading a quote from the police in London reminding people of the things that they are allowed to do under lockdown. And I did chortle to myself on the sort of like, oh, we have got it so easy in this country compared to what people have had it like in Italy and Spain. It's like, basically people are just kind of, okay, I know what the rules are and I'm going to kind of stick to them. But this isn't really essential. Yeah. Right. To be honest, I think Britain's done better than I expected it to. I thought people would have given up on this a long time ago. I think the problem is in major cities like London, London's not really set up for 21st century traffic and life in general. It's definitely not set up for all those people living there and then everybody trying to stay 2 meters apart. But I do think that when you go out, people are making quite an effort and being very respectful. I hate this COVIDiot word. I really do. You don't see many people being complete COVIDiots or whatever it is.
No.
Although, shout out to the idiots who basically decided that their bank holiday activity would be some fly tipping on the lane up to where I'm.
That's gone up a lot, hasn't it, during this?
Yeah, but they didn't dump it in the field. They didn't even dump it in a lay-by. They literally just left it across the middle of the lane. I mean, who does that? What mentality do you have to do something like that? If I honestly thought that someone like that would listen to the This Is Money podcast, I'd appeal to them to change their ways. But I'm sure none of our listeners would ever dream of fly-tipping something in the middle of the... Fly-tipping something, I'm just going to put a full stop there. I'm not going to say in the middle of the road.
That is... Yeah, it's not like it's, you know, essential journeys being made at the moment, NHS ambulances and all that sort of thing that would need to get faster.
Excuse me, what's your essential journey, sir? I'm just going to go fly-tipping on the bank holiday. Really? I thought I'd do a bit of fly-tipping. Yeah.
Yeah, please don't fly-tip, people. But anyway... Yeah. That is it. We've got plenty more to talk about, I'm sure, around this coming up in future episodes. But that's it for this one. So you can keep up to date with the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. And if you have any comments or questions for the team or anything you would like them to look into, Simon.
You can email us at editor@thisismoney.co.uk. You can tweet us at thisismoney, or you can come to thisismoney.co.uk/podcast. to join in the debate in reader comments. And just to end on a positive note rather than a negative one, the Great British public, in fact, are much better than the fly tippers, because the Great British public moved it out of the road before anybody in officialdom came along to deal with it. They looked at it and went, right, that can't be left there, and moved it out of the way. So there you go. Most people sound.
If you like our podcast, why not rate us on iTunes? It helps people find us.